Welcome to Appaloosa Radio, where stories come alive. Appaloosa Radio is a service of the Appaloosa Springs Audio Theater. Regarding a 1947 murder. Myretta June Jones. By Stan Morgan, Private Investigator. Read by Linda and Winston G. and Dr. Greg Hummel. In honor of Stan Morgan. Chapter 2.
Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua, and chilawa, kukala, goomba. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua, my bambino, go to sleep. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua, and chilawa, kukala, goomba. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua, my bambino, go to sleep. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua, my bambino, go to sleep. Chibaba, chibaba, chihuahua.
In the pirate cave, the small Wanda suddenly felt large compared to the tiny 5-year-old. In the cave, a place where adults never ventured, a place where no one could see in, Wanda held absolute power. Everyone, particularly Myretta June, had to do what Wanda said. Wanda was in power. Now, she would show someone else what it felt like to be humiliated, powerless, afraid, unable to resist, compelled to follow orders. Wanda was in power. Even as the two girls walked to the cave, Myretta June's grandmother was worrying where the young girl might be. So, at best, Wanda the Powerful's time was limited. But it was when the younger girl started screaming, screaming so loud she woke the crows, screaming so loud that you could hear her above the traffic on the Casa Loma Highway, screaming so the fearful grandma could come. It was when Wanda the Powerful panicked. More than anything, she was afraid of what kids all feared, a whipping. In 1947, our parents in Bakersfield had not read Dr. Benjamin Spock and did not know about gentler techniques of child discipline. When we misbehaved, we were whipped, I mean really beaten. It was not a whipping unless there were real welts and lots of them. Fearing a whipping, Wanda could not allow Myretta June to continue screaming. She hit her again and again and again. Then, she walked over to the irrigation canal and washed her blouse. She went home hoping that no one had seen her.
She hit her again and 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 again. Then, she walked over to the irrigation canal and washed her blouse. She went home hoping that no one had seen her.
In her psychiatric evaluation conducted at Camarillo State Mental Hospital, Wanda Evans was described as dull-witted, incapable of benefiting from psychotherapy. Her verbal communication skills were not sufficient to do the treatment. Yet, at the same time, almost all of Bakersfield believed that Wanda Evans had intentionally seduced Myretta June, attempting to turn the 5-year-old into her perpetual lesbian sex slave. Many believe that Wanda came to the neighborhood grocery store with a specific plan for luring her to the pirate cave and then disrobing her. Intentionally seducing, I believe, requires quite high-order communication skills. What's going on here? How can a dull-witted girl simultaneously be thought to have the mental capacity to intentionally seduce another? The answer, I believe, is that Bakersfield in 1947 did not know how to explain the events of one girl undressing another. Wanda Evans had to be a psychopath, a term often used by her own father. Others described Wanda as a sexual pervert. To others, she was a deviant. Some even called her a pedophile. After the trial, Moretta June Jones' mother praised the judge's decision to sentence Wanda to life in prison, saying, "I don't want to think that there can be anyone like that going around in the world." The crime of murder, the crime of killing another child, was less important than ridding society of such perverted sexual deviancy. I argued earlier that the crime was more about power than sex. While I think I am right, even if I was wrong, does it make any sense to say that Wanda lured little Moretta June? I think not. I believe the available evidence suggests that the encounter at the neighborhood's grocery was a happenstance, not a planned event. Moretta June's grandmother sent her to the store to buy one specific item. Wanda stopped by the store on her way home from junior high. The two happened to be at the same place at the same time.
However, consider what might lead to the opposite conclusion, that Wanda intentionally went to the grocery store seeking to harm Moretta June. One such piece of evidence is the reported hammer. When I first heard the radio story, the reporter said that Moretta June was killed with a hammer. I had often played on the dirt mound that we call the mountain and in the pirate cave. We dug with old tin cans. We did not have shovels or picks. In 1947, hand tools were still expensive. No one would have considered giving children expensive tools. My father repaired gasoline pumps at filling stations. He had lots of tools. Most certainly, however, he would never have let me use any of them to dig dirt. Most of the fathers living in Billy Goat Acres had far fewer tools than my father. Like my father, none would permit their tools to be used digging. If Wanda used a hammer to murder Moretta June, she would have had to bring it with her to the pirate cave. There is no other way for it to have gotten there. Bringing a hammer would be a clear indication that Wanda intended to harm Moretta June. However, the radio reporter was wrong. The investigators established that Wanda grabbed a rock. Rocks were everywhere. It was a weapon of chance, not one intentionally brought to bring harm.
Some have said that Wanda Evans bribed little Moretta June with the promise of candy. Candy has often been used by evil people to lure children into harm. Nonetheless, in her confession, Wanda never mentions candy. Neither of the clerks at the grocery store ever indicated that Wanda had purchased candy. To be sure, she might have stolen candy, and then used it to lure the child. Still, the clerks at the Wayside Grocery knew all of the children and juveniles who frequented the store. They knew which ones were thieves. Wanda Evans was not seen as one. They had never seen her steal candy. Finally, investigators did not find candy in the cave or in Moretta June's clothing. I do not think there was any.
We don't know what, if anything, Wanda said to Moretta June. We don't know why Moretta June went to Wanda's house instead of going straight home. We do know that it was Wanda who suggested playing in the pirate cave. We do not know whether Moretta June had ever played there before. However, none of that adds up to a planned seduction. Remember, also, the whole chain of events, Moretta June walking to the store, meeting Wanda, going to Wanda's house, and going to the pirate cave, took place in a very short period of time, 45 minutes at the very most. In that short of time, the notion of luring and seducing makes little sense.
If I had been an investigator on the case in 1947, I would want to know more about Wanda's older brother, Harry. He is present at every aspect of the events. He joins the initial search. He is the one who suggests that they search the pirate cave. He tells police that he saw Moretta June and Wanda together in his house, and he gives them his address. He purportedly tells his father that what Wanda had done. He carefully watches the police activities at the pirate cave, including the removal of the body. I wonder whether Harry had been spying on his sister. I also wonder whether earlier Harry had ever taken Wanda to the pirate cave, maybe with a group of his juvenile friends, a slow-witted girl, and would have been an easy target for a gang. When the boys in my own neighborhood defended the mountain against the rough boys from Billy Goat Acres, we never invited girls along, nor do I remember seeing girls among the enemy. There seemed to be a tacit agreement that this was only a males-only enclave. So I wonder, what was this girl doing there? How did she know about it? How did she know that it was a place beyond the control of parents or other adults? A place where you could go do things that you couldn't do elsewhere. I would have had a number of questions for Harry.
I would also have questions for Wanda's stepmother, Edith. The first and most important was, where was she during the events? I have a couple of theories, but no real evidence for any of them. The news accounts tell us three important things about Edith. First, in her statements to the investigators, she said that her husband had told her to stay out of the affair, it was all on him. Like Wanda, she had no apparent power in the family. Second, when her husband told her to wash and scrub Wanda's clothes, she did so without asking where all the blood came from. She was used to taking orders without questions. Finally, there is the news photograph of the three of them entering the courtroom. Wanda is clinging to her father's midsection, looking ever much the scared little girl. Calvin is wearing a leather jacket and what appears to be his work clothes. He is looking away. However, to me, the most interesting person in the photo is Edith. Her hair is wild and uncombed, she has deep-set, worn-out eyes. Her face is what I notice. It is the same panic but emotionless face that one often sees during manic depressive episodes. A powerless woman who does not question, and now seems emotionless. I wonder, was Edith at home, but completely psychologically detached from everything? Was she at work? Was she someplace drinking or sleeping off a bout of drinking? What was Edith's relationship to Wanda? I see no evidence that it was warm and caring. Was it exploitive? Was it violent? Or, alternatively, was Wanda the aggressor, throwing violent temper tantrums, abusing her stepmother in physical altercations? We do not know.
More than anyone, if I had been an investigator on the 1947 case, I would want to know more about Wanda's father, Calvin. We know he was an auto body mechanic. We know he was at work when the events happened. We believe that he learned about them from his son Harry, who purportedly told him about them when he came home. However, we also know that when the police knocked on his door, he claimed to know nothing about the events, and he refused to wake his daughter and allow the investigators to interview her. During the multiple court hearings, he was frequently approached by reporters who sought comments from him. He often told reporters that Wanda was a psychotic who did all kinds of things he could not explain. When pressed for details, he would say that she broke into other people's homes and would be found just standing there, not stealing things, just looking around. Thank you.
I have a theory about the housebreaking incident. I don't think it was more than once. That does not imply psychotic behavior. For evidence, I point to a photograph that appeared in Life magazine about a year after Wanda's conviction. The photograph pictures an expensive automobile whose trunk was sprayed with more than 50 bullet holes. It seems that a group of Billy Goat Acre juveniles had stolen the car, and had driven the car all over town, before heading up the infamous Grapevine Pass toward Los Angeles. Once on the principal highway, Kern County sheriffs and the California Highway Patrol officers had followed in hot pursuit, shooting at it. The stolen car finally ran out of gas, and the juveniles jumped out and began to run away. However, within minutes all were captured and lined up behind the bullet-ridden car. A wily photographer shot a picture and eventually sold it to Life magazine. When asked why they did it, one of the juveniles volunteered, "We steal things all the time, breaking into houses and stores. It is what we do for fun." In the context of Billy Goat Acre's juvenile crime, Wanda's own behavior seems explainable. She probably accompanied a group of boys, likely including her brother Harry, as they broke into a house, but she stayed behind, dumbfounded, and unsure what to do next, after the others had left. This is not psychotic behavior. I believe that Calvin used the psychotic excuse to hide other, more sinister actions.
If you accept my hypothesis that Wanda Evans was sexually abused, then, as the research literature makes clear, the most likely perpetrator is an adult male who was socially proximal to the victim. The only adult male who was socially proximal to young Wanda was her father. She had no uncles or cousins who lived close enough to perform such actions. It was either her older brother Harry or her father Calvin. A theory that I've been considering is that her father began the abuse cycle and her brother and his friends continued it.
There are many questions I would have asked. Unfortunately, once the original investigators had decided that Wanda was an evil, lesbian pervert who lured the young child in order to perform her deviant deeds, they stopped the investigation. Wanda was quickly convicted on her own confession and sentenced to life without parole.
As I shared earlier, my parents decided to keep the radio and newspaper stories away from me so I wouldn't be afraid. I grew up knowing only the barest of details. By early 1950, Bakersfield had grown tired of the story, so it died. No one retold its gruesome details. It was gone from public consciousness. No one seemed to notice when an appeals court ruled that Wanda should have been tried for second-degree murder and reduced her prison sentence from life without parole to a variable term sentence, 5 to 10 years dependent on behavior. In 1955, Wanda Evans was released on parole and was moved to Fresno, where she was given a job in a hospital kitchen. Her official job title was dietary assistant, but she often washed dishes as well as preparing the patient's meals. My own interest in reinvestigating the murder of Moretta June Jones came when I photographed her headstone for the Find the Grave project. There is a growing community of similar photographers who assist genealogists by locating and documenting historical graves. By my own count, I have photographed nearly 1,000 headstones, most in California's Central Valley. Seeing her headstone brought back the memory of my fears from so long ago. I remembered the mountain and its secret pirate cave. I remembered throwing dirt clods at the rough boys from Billy Goat Acres. I remembered that a mentally defective girl had killed the 5-year-old with a hammer. But it was so long ago, and my parents had intentionally hid so many of the gruesome details from me. I was now a private investigator with my own business. My primary work came from defense attorneys who were defending clients in high-profile criminal cases. I had access to many databases that investigators use to locate people they may be seeking. I ran Wanda Evans' real name through those databases and came up with a hit. She was not far, just an hour away in a Fresno suburb. I called the phone number that I had located. A man's voice answered. For a very brief instant, I believed that I might be able to speak with Wanda herself. However, my call was too late. She had died on May 16, 2000, at the age of 66. The man who had answered the phone said he was her second husband. He welcomed me to come up for an interview. In all, I spent 2 full days with OJ. No, not that OJ. No, the man I interviewed was Oliver James, but he had always preferred OJ.
He said Wanda always called him OJ. As I wrote up my reports of my interviews with him, I found that I too was calling him OJ. A strange thing to do since I always value strict objectivity in writing my reports for my clients. OJ introduced me to one of Wanda's daughters. He also gave me the name of Wanda's longtime boss in the hospital's kitchen. Finally, he called the pastor at the Nazarene Church and asked him to share what he knew about Wanda. As an investigator, I could not have asked for a more cooperative and pleasant informant. OJ had married Wanda in 1959. He said that they both sang in the choir at the Nazarene Church. OJ was 16 years older than Wanda, and he too had been previously married, twice. He said that he used to be an alcoholic who went on binges, could be really mean. His cruelty had driven both of his previous wives to seek divorces. In 1958, OJ reported that he had found God, had stopped drinking, and began singing in the church choir.
OJ said that Wanda, soon after she began to work at the hospital's kitchen, had married a man who also worked at the hospital. But the marriage lasted just over a year. When Wanda told her husband that she was pregnant, he accused her of cheating on him, beat her badly, and then completely vanished. Wanda was left as the sole support of her oldest daughter.
When I interviewed Wanda's longtime boss at the hospital's kitchen, she said that Wanda was an ideal employee who never missed a day of work. She worked hard, got along with everyone, and had a cheery disposition. She was still working full-time in the hospital's kitchen until 3 weeks before her death from cancer. Wanda's former boss did tell me that she seldom spoke. She told me, "I think that she may have had a hearing problem. You had to get really close to get her to respond." Even though Wanda seldom spoke, she sang all the time. The boss said she was constantly singing. Songs from the radio, songs from her church, songs from her oaky past.
Wanda's daughter described her as a wonderful mother who would do anything for her children. She kept her children scrumptiously clean, and she spent her extra money buying special clothing and toys for her children. She would also often play with her children, right on the floor with them. Wanda never read stories to her children. Both OJ and her daughter said she had real problems trying to read stuff. So, Wanda bought a small record player. In the evening, when she helped her children to bed, she would play a story record on the record player.
In some ways, my conversation with Wanda's pastor was the most revealing. He said that he knew that Wanda had been in prison, but she never told him for what. However, the pastor said he had a friend who was a newspaper reporter, and the reporter had discovered all the facts. Wanda told her pastor that she liked being in jail. She liked the predictability of knowing what was going to happen next. She also really liked the prison food, and she liked her prison job. told her pastor that some of the women did unnatural stuff, but Wanda did not want anything to do with that. He said she believed that those women were on their way to hell, going there really fast.
When OJ proposed to her, the pastor said, she did not know what to do. The pastor said, I told her to forget about the past and, instead, build her future. OJ and Wanda had three children of their own and raised Wanda's own daughter from her first marriage. All four children were successfully brought into adulthood. All have jobs, pay taxes, are responsible citizens, and have spouses of their own. Not one has gotten into trouble with the police, none uses drugs, none has ever been a social burden on society. All love their parents. All think Wanda was a terrific mother.
If I did not know what had happened inside the pirate cave, I would declare Wanda Evans an exemplary individual. A marriage that lasted over 40 years. Four grown children who are successful and independent adults. Three grandchildren. A hard-working employee who never misses a day of work. A woman who still sings in her church's choir. A person who gives much but asks nothing in return. Yet, Myretta June Jones might also have become an exemplary individual. She may have married, had children, worked hard on her job, sang in her church's choir, been a person who unselfishly gives, expecting nothing back. Any murder victim is a what could have been. We do not know what they would really be because their life was stopped, truncated, severed, ended.
I think you sense my hesitation, my moral uncertainty. Does the present erase the past? For me, there was a related moral question. One of my motivations in reinvestigating this murder was to potentially write a book about it, but by the time I had finished my interviews and my investigation, I had more than sufficient material for such a book. The question I now ask myself is, should I? One thing I knew for certain was that I owed it to the person that Wanda had become to change her name so she would not be easily recognizable. Wanda Evans is a fictitious name for a very real person. Instead of compiling my material immediately into a book, I decided to wait.
It has been over 15 years since I completed my case files on the murder of Myretta June Jones. I have started to write the book several times, but each time I stopped. It would be accurate to say that this case has haunted me since I was 8 years old. It was too close. The victim attended my school. The crime happened near the cement bridge I used every day to cross the irrigation canal. The murder site was inside a play area that I had helped construct. After I had interviewed OJ, Wanda's daughter, and Wanda's longtime pastor, I felt that I knew Wanda as a person. She was not evil. She was not a monster. She was not any of the things I first believed when I listened to the reporters on the radio. She was nothing to be afraid of. Still, I felt ambiguity about those terrible events, now so long ago. I struggled to overcome my ambiguity, but alas, I could not. It is, I now believe, the real reason I never wrote the book. Thank you. As I write this, I have another demon to curse. I am enduring stage 4 bladder cancer. In the past few months, I have seen my capacities diminish, felt the closeness of my own death, and dealt with unending pain. I now fully understand rage. I never understood it before. I saw it in others, but not in me. I now know that if cancer were a person, and if I could reach it, I would grab a rock and beat it. I would not stop.
Chibaba chibaba chihuahua and chilawa kukala goomba. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua, my bambino go to sleep. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua and chilawa kukala goomba. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua, my bambino go to sleep. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua, my bambino go to sleep. Chibaba chibaba chihuahua.
Special thanks to Mr. Mike Morgan, Stan's younger brother who shared his memories. And Mr. Keith Couch, Stan's close friend, who reviewed earlier drafts and shared his wealth of knowledge.